This episode of China Money Podcast is sponsored by Lehman Brown, a China accounting, audit, and advisory firm. Golden Gate, a law firm providing a full range of legal services in China. Covert Limited, a leading internet privacy tool. And 51mice.com, a comprehensive online platform for meetings, incentives, conferences, and exhibitions in China. Please go to our website, chinamoneynetwork.com, and click on our sponsors' links. Thank you so much, everyone, for your support. Hi, everyone. Welcome to China Money Podcast. I'm your host, Nina Xiang. Our guest today is Dr. Alan Zeman, chairman of the Lan Kwai Fang Group, often referred to as the father of Lan Kwai Fang. Lan Kwai Fang Group is a real estate company with projects in Hong Kong, China, and Thailand across residential, food and beverage, retail, and entertainment segments. Dr. Zeman spoke with me yesterday in Hong Kong, and here is our conversation. I hope you enjoy it. Hello, Alan. Welcome to China Money Podcast.
Good to be here.
So I know your specialty is in commercial property, but before we get into that in more detail...
Correction, not just in commercial property. I also do residential, also do many, do theme parks, do every kind of property you can well imagine.
Okay. So let me rephrase.
Okay.
Your specialty is in entertainment, in lifestyle type of property.
We also do residential.
Okay,
I do lifestyle. I have resorts.
Okay.
I do hotels.
right. Okay,
just,
so that's even better.
A big hotel
because
in Macau.
My question, right?
I do every kind
of
property.
Yeah. So the question is about the housing market in China.
Uh-huh.
You know, in first tier cities, Beijing, Shanghai, Shenzhen, prices have been increasing very dramatically in the past few months. Does this concern you?
Obviously, those cities, of course, have been going against the grain of the other cities in China. They've been increasing tremendously. And as we all have seen in Hong Kong, in other parts of the world, in London, New York, if prices get too high, if they get too much out of line, there must be a correction eventually. And I just think that although the economy of China, as we all know, is slowing down, has slowed down, but those tier one cities have been advancing because their economies seem to be going against the grain. I think that you just have to be cautious about those cities. Eventually there will be an adjustment.
But do you think the prices right now are too high?
I think, it's hard to say the prices are too high if there's buyers. The prices are not too high. You know, it's when people stop buying that the prices are too high. For the moment, the prices are still going up. Developers are still bidding on property, at record prices. I think the government in Beijing is looking at maybe instituting some kind of measures to slow down the rise, which I think what will happen, because I think Beijing understands that if prices get too far out of whack, that they have to do something to look after everyone. We've had experience from the stock market when it just went, to 140, 150% up, and everybody knows it's not sustainable. At the end, you had a big crash, and so.
Do you see that's in store for the property markets?
I don't think that's in store. I mean, that was just in a very short period of time.
Yes.
Fundamentals, mm-hmm. it just went. There are Shanghai, Beijing, those economies are very, very strong, and there's a great influx of people coming there, companies wanting to do business, new offices opening, and there's still a lot of money in China, a hell of a lot of money in China.
But do you see a price correction in the next, this year or next?
I think within a year, I think I would predict that there could be, I don't think it'll be a dramatic price correction, but if there is, it might be 5%, something like that. But it won't be a dramatic correction.
What about long-term outlook? Because if you compare to Hong Kong, Beijing and Shanghai property prices are still not that expensive.
Long-term, I feel that those cities will continue to be strong. I think that it's, to me, I look at those cities like putting money in the bank, you know, and not having to worry for long term. I think that the economy of China will continue to grow, will continue to get stronger, and I think that those cities especially will continue to lead.
Now, if we look at across the country, in lower tier cities, yes. second tier, third, fourth tier cities, a lot of oversupply. My brother, my sister, they live in a third tier city in China. Yes. Both of them own 3 to 4 apartments. Mm. So that's definitely not sustainable. Mm. How bad do you think the oversupply problem is in China?
I think the oversupply problem is very serious. I think there was an oversupply not just in real estate. I think it was probably in every commodity, and that was with the previous administration. Keeping people working, you know, and supporting the employment. And so there was an oversupply of everything, basically. I think that it'll take a number of years for the oversupply to work its way down. I think that we can see we're just doing a project in Wuxi, we're just came back from Wuxi, actually sitting with the party secretary there. He was saying that the area where we are concentrating on in the last few months, there's been a complete 15% to 20% take up of all the residential, and prices have escalated as well. And so in certain areas, I can see that there are people are buying. You know, people in China are very clever. They look for good deals, they look for value, as everywhere else. They understand now, and they can pick and choose the properties that they want. Eventually, you know, you have a lot of people moving from the countryside to this. The urbanization is still very, very strong and will continue to be strong. Those people need homes as they move to the cities, and I think that that will slowly make its way through the oversupply. And I think as well, I think Beijing is putting in regulations to slow down the the build and construction of property.
So like you said, certain places they'll still get filled up, but other places they might not. And for those places, what do you think should happen? One real estate property tycoon in China, Ren Zhiqiang, said we should demolish those buildings. Is that too dramatic?
No, I think that's a bit dramatic. I think demolishing buildings is not really the answer. I think, you know, potentially looking at even for the time being, government could buy some of that property itself and lease out to to low cost housing or have some kind of a scheme that works so that you kind of. In China, it's possible to do that with, government certainly sitting with huge reserves, a plan could, if it becomes a serious problem, which I don't think it is at the moment, but if it becomes a very serious problem, I think the government has the ability to really take ownership of some of the property and then use it for long-term investment and slowly sell it off. It's not like, unlike in Hong Kong, we have a home ownership scheme, government subsidized housing, which government owns the property and then sells it off slowly lower income people. I think there's always a way, just thinking out of the box, and in China it's very easy to do those kind of things because the system is set up so that you're able to do those things.
Right, it definitely sounds like a much better plan than demolishing those buildings.
Well, demolishing the buildings is not even.
Okay. So now let's move on to commercial property. Uh-huh. You've said that the future of shopping malls and not going to be so much about retail, it's going to be about lifestyle, about entertainment.
Correct.
So what does that mean for mall operators?
Well, I mean, many mall operators actually have been calling me because they don't understand what is happening. In the past, it was a very easy thing. You wanted to build a shopping mall, 70 to 80% was retail, 20 to 30% was F&B, with some office connected to the mall. And that basically was a no-brainer. You can go to sleep at night, you can build a mall and be successful, have a good rental income coming in. what's happened because of online shopping. That's totally changed the whole buying methods of especially young people. Today, everybody, most young people.
I never shop, go to the malls. I do 100% shopping online.
Exactly. Yeah. And not just you, but most people I speak to, are the same. And so that has caused a huge problem for existing malls who are from, what I say, the last generation, And I think that going forward, lifestyle malls, I don't even call them malls, lifestyle places, will be the way to go. And it'd probably be about 65% or 60% F&B and entertainment and 35 to 40% retail. Because the only way you get young people to go to the mall is if they're going to go to a restaurant, or they're going to a club, or they're going to some kind of Lego Discovery Center,
kids,
or something like that, kids. And so that's, and then if they're in the mall, there's a good chance they might go into a retail shop, and then it's a great disruption in every industry in the world, actually, but especially in China. China seems to be leading everything.
Even if some of the mall operators know the right mix of different ingredients, they might still not do it as well as Lan Kwai Fong Group does. Let's go into a very specific example, the Haikou Lan Kwai Fong Center. Yeah. I read when you first saw the design of the place, you didn't like it, you want to change it, and so you did change it before you accept the project.
Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit about what did you change?
Well, when we looked at it, there's a flow. There's a science to why something works. Something, you don't just build things because a designer looks at it and thinks that he or she wants to, thinks it's the right thing to do. There's usually a science of how you get people from first floor to second floor, why they're going to go up there, how you're going to get them, what the building needs to look like, the look and feel of it all, its first impression. In the past, when I first looked at that project, the design of it was from an American architect, and we just felt that it didn't have the soul. It didn't have the way forward. And so we have an in-house team that looked at the buildings.
Actually, an in-house design architecture team.
We do a lot in-house, working together with outside architects. But an architect usually is not a business person. They're very good on design, but they really are not operators. So it's up to the developer or the individual to really work with every designer, to really think of yourself as a customer walking through that mall and looking at it, and why would you go there, what's going to make you spend money, how are you going to, how do the buildings look. There's really a taste level, there's a feeling to it, and that's what we did. We looked at it and saw how we can bring it more to human scale.
Just give us one example, like one place that you changed that you really liked.
It's so many. Well, I mean, in Shanghai at the moment, we're doing the Dream Center, and there again, we decided to use six different architects because we didn't want one architect to do the whole site, because it would feel like a shopping mall. And the last thing we wanted to do is to make it feel like a shopping mall. You wanted it to feel like different. Every designer has their own. It's like a painter. Every painter, Picasso, you can always tell Picasso painting. You can always tell, another artist. So every architect has his own or her own design, and it's usually easy to tell. I can usually tell which designer did this. And so for us, we decided, rather than using one, which was the original concept, let's use six different ones for different zones. And so it feels like this has been here, this is like a small town, like a small village. It's not just wasn't built by one person.
Was
many, many different. Yeah, has its own feel, its own look and feel. We did the same in Wuxi, you know, and we tried to do a similar look in Haikou, whereby the buildings themselves. In Wuxi, we took local architecture, what some of the local buildings looked like. So we did that in some buildings, and then some of them were very modern. So there was a combination of different, you know, different feeling. So it's not boring.
When you walk into
a normal shopping mall, it's quite, after a while, they're all the same.
Yeah.
They're quite boring because they all look the same. You look down a long corridor and there's just one shop after the other.
So for the Haikou project, initially it was going to be completed in 2013. And then later it was supposed to open in the second half of 2015. I wasn't able to find out on the internet whether it opened or yet. So what is the latest?
It opened 2 months ago, actually.
Okay.
Yeah. In Haikou, just to be upfront, we're just advisors for it. You know, we were helping Mission Hills to design it, to do it.
Mission Hill Group is financing the project. You're not financing the project.
No, that wasn't a project.
Manager.
Yeah, we're not even managing. We're just helping with the design, helping to open it up. I still go down and I'm involved and have a working relationship with Mission Hills, but that wasn't, because that was done way before we came on the scene. Mission Hills had 10 golf courses there. They had their own design that they'd gone ahead, and then they were kind of struggling because they weren't really sure about commercial, and of course they wanted something like a Lan Kwai Fong. You know, originally when we looked at it, it was difficult because it wasn't downtown, it was outside. But actually, I'm very proud of what was built. I mean, if you go and look at it, it'll take a while, to get very busy, but at the moment, it's quite unique. There's nothing like it in China at the moment. I think because, you know, Haikou is not really a first-tier city,
and
you don't have a huge business community there with many offices. It's basically a city based around tourism from the rest of China, and so it's attracting the tourists. But it's very, very well done, and I think it'll be very successful.
Okay.
I think at the end of the day, it'll be one of those that will be. It's got all the elements, and there's still the hotels under construction, the Ritz-Carlton's under construction, and the Renaissance.
So are they allowed to use the Lan Kwai Fong name now, or Lan Kwai Fong is not totally?
No, Lan Kwai Fong. The retail part is called Centerville.
I see.
Not Lan Kwai Fong, you know.
Okay.
And so it's Centerville, which is Mission Hills brand, you know, because they have one in Shenzhen that they built as well.
So it's basically exited from the project then.
We haven't exited, but we're always part of the design of it and getting it.
But you play a very minor role.
Not a major role in it.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And there's not even going to be Lan Kwai Fong Group that will go there.
There will be Lan Kwai Fong Group. We open it up, opened up a couple of restaurants there in California. The original Lan Kwai Fong is open there, or will be opened in March, and then we have another one as well. So we're creating the energy, you know, for it, you know, but it'll take a while to build up.
I see. So looking at that,
it's a very exciting project.
Right, it looks like a very high-end place, and luxury spending in China has been declining because of the anti-competition.
Yes.
And also how Chinese people are moving overseas to spend rather than spending inside of China.
Yes.
So how do you see the future of high-end targeting commercial places?
I think one of the problems for China for high-end was, the crackdown on corruption really kind of put an end to a lot of free money that was floating around in the economy that found its way to the very, very high-end brands. I think as well, people realized, you know, last year I think 130 million tourists left China to travel abroad. By 2020, they're expecting 200 million visitors will leave China. as they went abroad, they started to realize that because the low euro and in Japan, the low currency in Korea, they could buy things cheaper than at home. And so, you know, the Chinese are very, very clever. And so I think a lot of the purchases, especially in high end, were done overseas. And that caused a slowdown. And the other thing, the other problem with high end, as you know, Chinese are very face conscious. When this build out of real estate was happening the last number of years in China, third tier, fourth tier, second tier cities, and many, many new shopping malls were built. All these high-end brands were in the fourth tier shopping malls. And what happened was that many of the people started to see these brands were everywhere. They were not so exclusive because you can get them in every city. Before, you had to go to Shanghai or Hong Kong or Guangzhou or Beijing to buy these brands. Suddenly, you didn't have to anymore. You had them in your own city, even if the price was a little more expensive. So I think that was another thing. I think many of the big brands, especially in China, overexpanded without really understanding the culture about Chinese people having face and wanting to have the best right. and the most exclusive and that kind of thing. And I think in the end, that wound up as being a backlash against high end. The other thing is, I'm not sure how many people order high end online. I think that's still, high end is still traditionally, you want to go into the store and feel it because it's expensive, you know, and so it's a different kind of thing. I think there still is or will be a good market for high end. I think that it will continue for brands. I think that now many of the retailers are closing down a number of shops that are not performing. Mm-hmm. And I think once they get back to the right number, I think high end will always be good.
Mm-hmm. Because we are a publication that focuses on money, so
yes.
For all your projects in China,
yes.
How do you usually finance them?
Each one is different.
Right.
Some are through banks. Some are through partnership. Some are with governments. It depends on the deal, depends on the city, depends how badly they want the Lan Kwai Fong.
I would think if you have a proposal from the city of Chengdu, for mm-hmm. example, they would say, I'll finance with our, you know, bank of our bank
Whatever.
Branch in Chengdu for this project.
Uh-huh.
So basically for Lan Kwai Fong, it's a very good deal because you have very minimum amount of capital input.
Yes.
Mostly uh-huh. with bank financing, and uh-huh. I imagine very favorable terms, maybe like uh-huh. 5%
yes. uh-huh.
from
uh-huh.
the banks.
Uh-huh. Depending, I mean, everyone is different. We have
I
a
see.
Different deal. You know, again, I'm a businessman, and you know, we have a brand that is very successful and very much in demand, and so we're able. If you want our product, we will give very, very do a great job. You know, really. Do a first-class job. And
okay, so from aside from bank financing, do you also use partially of your own capital?
Yes, sometimes, of course.
And what about private capital? Like
depending who it is or what it is, we also have worked with different investment banks, private capital.
So you also have, 8 years ago, you set up Lan Kwai Fong Capital, which
yes.
is like a private equity
yes.
arm and
yeah,
also
yeah.
a family
yeah.
office for the for
Correct.
Your family. So, and also I've heard the company, Lan Kwai Fong Capital is raising external
yes.
money for
yes.
an independent fund.
Lifestyle fund, right.
A
lifestyle fund.
Lifestyle fund,
right.
I see. And the target amount is 500 million?
300 to 500 million at the moment.
Oh, I see.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, yeah.
So how is the fundraising process going so far?
Going well. We're just we actually had hired someone from CLSA, ex-CLSA, who's very experienced in these kind of things. We put a good management team together. We're in the process of putting, you know, at the moment we're sourcing the right deals. Of course, we've got lined up a lot of capital behind it. The biggest thing at the moment is in funds, you know, at the moment, every young person you speak to has a new startup, you know,
yes,
has a new app. You've never had more product on the market than, you know, I've grown quite skeptical on a lot of them because a lot of them are great ideas, but I'm not sure they're going to execute it. And so for us, we're looking more at ones that are already existing, that are in business for a while, that need extra capital to expand.
Early stage?
Probably mid.
Mid-stage?
Mid-stage. Exactly.
Okay.
And so early stage is too much of a gamble, you know, because there's just too much around.
Yes.
It's like the oversupply of shopping malls in China. There's too much.
Right. When did the fundraising process start?
We started a couple of months ago. And we're just, at the moment, finalizing all the details. At the moment, we're sourcing the right companies that we want to invest in. So at least there's a good portfolio of what we're going to go out with.
Mm-hmm. What is the relationship between the fund and also the group, the parent group? Is the fund supposed to support?
No. That's just a separate arm. Eventually, we probably will do a real estate fund. Actually, somebody came to talk to me yesterday, one of the investment banks, about potentially doing a real estate fund, which is something we're very strong on, especially in today's market, which we understand very well, and possibly looking at expanding. And again, I said, if you bring me the right partner, somebody who understands and has money that is willing to have a long-term outlook, I'd be very willing to do that.
Why did you suddenly accept the idea of running sort of like on the side investment management business?
I think that because of our experience in China, we see so many young companies or companies that are doing well. China, I really believe very strongly in the future of China, even with the slowdown and all that. It's a correction, which is healthy for China. I just felt that it's a good time. I look at other funds that are doing very, very well. We have the ability to go in if something's not doing well. We're creative enough. We can change things around. Many typical funds just have financial people who really don't know how to fix a business. They can just look at the numbers and not really understand. We have the ability to go in and creatively come up with, spin it, do something that I think can work. And I thought that's the edge that we have over most other funds because of our creativity, because of our in-house management.
I've read many different articles. Some of them you said you don't want to do an IPO because you don't want to have the burden of being a public company. And others you said you're interested. So we have the camera rolling. Yeah. Let's get this on record. What is your thinking?
For the moment, I'm not really interested because I don't really need it. Doing IPO, you know, when you're public, it's a whole other world, it's a whole other business. You make decisions. I sit on the board of so many public companies, real estate companies,
yes,
other companies. Sometimes you're forced to make decisions because you have the figures coming out, for the quarter, for the half year. I like being private if I can, for as long as I can, because I can just do things the way I feel are right for the business, not right for the public company. Mm-hmm. So that's why, for the time being, if I can be private, I'm happy. If at some point I feel I really need the money, the public money, then I'll do an IPO and go public.
Some articles say that you want to open more Lan Kwai Fong centers in China before you plan an IPO.
Well, again, I would look at it, because again, if I am going to go public, I want it to be very strong. I want it to be very good. I hate for people to lose money. I've always been a winner, and so I'm very cautious about if I take other people's money. It's important that they make money as well as me.
Mm-hmm. I see that you have a very strong tie with Alibaba. Huh? I just wonder if they would be one of the investors in your fund. Huh.
Too early to say. I'm on the board of the Alibaba Foundation, and I work quite closely with Zhou Chai and the team. It's an amazing company. I really admire Jack Ma. I really admire Alibaba. They've done an amazing platform, and I think the company will just continue to grow. And if I can be part of it, I'd be very happy. They're definitely a great wonder story.
Now, lastly, we're in Hong Kong, and Hong Kong wants to reinvent itself as a tech hub. But there's increasing concerns about legal protection of intellectual property rights and other things. So if you were a young man and starting up your own young business today, would you choose Hong Kong?
Hong Kong, I know there's a lot of people down on Hong Kong. The community is very polarized at the moment. Different people, I think, that have different thoughts. You know, I think that Hong Kong still is a very, very dynamic place. Obviously, when I say Hong Kong, I'm including China, because the market in Hong Kong is just too small. Today, with the through the internet, you're able to grow your business actually around the world, not just China. I think that because the low tax base, the rule of law, even though the copyright bill has kind of been stalled at the moment, there's still a lot of opportunity here. You have a lot of very companies from all over the world. You have head offices from all over the world. Financial community, the stock market's still very, very strong, one of the strongest in the world. And the proximity to China really gives you an advantage in Hong Kong. And so I still believe very strongly in Hong Kong. You know, you have a 15% tax rate, which is very, very good, and really limited government interference. And that's always been the strength of Hong Kong, and a rule of law, which is very strong. And so we have a sound economy. It's just that people, there's a divide, not just Hong Kong, but in the world, between the older generation and the young generation that is growing up totally different, in a different world, the IT world. A lot of the older generation didn't grow up with that. And so they have a problem understanding what all these young people are doing. They're lazy. They're not the same as our generation when we work hard. But it's a different world today. And I believe, you know, I work very much with young people, and I admire them very, very much. The world is changing very, very quickly. I think that Hong Kong really still has a great opportunity for anyone with a good idea and wanting to make it happen. But the competition is very, very fierce, so you have to be really good.
Well, great. Thank you so much, Alan, for your time.
My pleasure. My pleasure.